morning. It's a new day with Kathy Barnett on 1180 WFYL. Call in at 610-539-TALK. 610-539-TALK. It is a new day on, again, WFYL 1180. I am so excited to be here with you today, and I have Dr. Bob online with me as well. He's going to help provide some commentary on the plethora of news events that are swirling all around us. And so get ready. Again, call in at 610-539-TALK, 610-539-8255. We're going to be talking about that presidential debate that went down last Thursday and some of the fallout since then. There has been some fallout. We also, Dr. Bob is going to also provide an Iranian update, and he is probably one of the better persons I have met thus far. To just provide information on what's going on with this Iranian deal, this botched Iranian deal. So I'm so excited to kind of get an update on where are we? Has it passed? Is Congress just going to do a back bend for Obama and allow it to just go on? So Dr. Bob, are you there with me?
Tis I.
Yes, Dr. Bob, thank you so very much for coming on and sharing some of your wisdom with our listeners here. Dr. Bob, tell people who you are.
Okay, first of all, I am a physician. I am a hematologist-oncologist. I practice at Nazareth Hospital in Northeast Philly. But I've also been a political activist since, when you think about it, since I was involved with newspapers in school in the 1960s. But the bottom line is that I am also a Republican committee person, but that doesn't mean that I always vote Republican, although these days I think you can do nothing but, because the Dems almost all are enablers of the evil individual who's living in 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue till January 20th, 2017. So that's a little overview.
Thank you so very much, Dr. Bob, for that. So, guys, Before we start off with kind of giving an update on some of the news events, let me open up with a passage of scripture real quick. I actually woke up with this on my mind coming out of a dream, and so I figure I would share it with you as well.
All right, I'm ready.
Colossians chapter 1, verse 16. It says, "For by him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things were created by him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together." And then jump down to verse 19. It says, "For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through the blood shed on the cross." Now, why am I talking about that? One of the things that was coming to me as I was waking up this morning is that all things have been, that God was pleased to put all fullness in Christ, and it dwells in Christ. And as we know as Christians, Jesus dwells in us via the Holy Spirit. And so we have the fullness of God dwelling on the inside of us. And I just thought that was such a powerful concept to begin to think from a position of not a victim. If you look at the world around us, it's constantly telling us that we're victims, that we're behind and not ahead, that we're lacking and not full. And yet, as a Christian, you look at the Word of God and you begin to realize that, no, I'm not. I don't start the day from a position of weakness and less than or a deficit. But we start each day from a position of having the fullness of the Godhead dwelling on the inside of us, guiding us, leading us, willing to provide us with the directions. The Word of God says that he's so intimate that he would even tell us, "Okay, now stop, turn left. Okay, now stop. Okay, now turn right." That's the kind of intimacy God desires to have with each and every one of us. But then right above that, it says all things were created by him, for him, and that they all have, no matter what it is, all powers, all rulers, all authorities, all things. And that's also comforting, because we live in a day and time where we, again, feel helpless. Like, all of these decisions are just being made and just kind of rammed down our throat, and there's no other thing for us to do except to acquiesce. And again, we need to recognize that not only is God allowing these things to happen, but in fact, he is ushering these events in. So I think we need to have a mind shift. and how we think about who we are and how we think about who God is. Because either he is who he says that he is, or we all need to go out and find a new savior. Because either he is who he says he is, and these things are not taking him by surprise, or we need to go find someone else to put our faith in. And it comes down, for me anyway, just as simple as that. Okay, now with that, I just wanted to share with you guys what I was thinking as I was waking up. You have those dreams and you don't even remember what it is you were dreaming, but this was like in the fading recesses of my mind as I was waking up, that this is what I was dreaming about. And so I just wanted to share that with you. Again, you're listening to It's a New Day on 1180 WFYL. Call in. I really want you guys to take advantage of Dr. Bob being here with us today, and being able to ask him questions, get clarity on the things that are going on, whether we're talking about this Iranian deal. There are no simple questions. Call in at 610-539-TALK, 610-539-TALK. Now, Dr. Bob, you said you wanted to start off with talking about the Iranian. Provide us with an update on the Iran deal. What's going on with that?
Well, first of all, let me reply to your opener.
Okay.
And point out that I pulled out a reference while you were talking. Mm-hmm. And sort of perhaps was triggered by, although probably you already had the thought in mind, by my use of the word evil and how we essentially can't lie down and ignore that. And it's important to become an activist in this regard. And there's no better target than the Iranian deal that Obama pulled off for a lot of reasons. And in preparation for this discussion, I have had a couple interactions, including watching TV from 6 to 7 on all three cable networks. And I'm going to try to mainstream what has occurred in that regard by citing, for example, what happened with Chuck Schumer during the debate on Thursday when he came out against the deal and the repercussions thereof, both in the literature that I was reading and then even listening to Bill Kristol talking about the issue on MSNBC's Morning Joe and fencing rather aggressively, you might say, with foils that didn't have tips that were covered by rubber when discussing this deal, which means it was for real and it was vicious. And what happened basically is this. Some people argued that he came out right after Kirsten Gillibrand and someone else, another senator, came out in favor of the deal so that his impact was going to be minimized because it was all political and because his vote was already offset and White House thinks they got the votes anyway, et cetera, et cetera. But Kristol points out that he could have done that in September. Then they said, well, he did it without saying he's going to try to usher votes in favor of his stance because he's supposedly dubbed as the next leader of the Democrats in the Senate. And then Kristol pointed out, yes, but he put out 2,000 words explaining why he was doing his thing. So if you look at the data, and that's what I always try to do, and we'll do that also with the debate contents themselves, you see the way people try to politicize things when people are actually being sincere. And there's no question that the content of the reasons why Schumer is against the deal were never disputed during any of the discussion,
and now,
which speaks volumes.
And now, let me just pause there for a moment. One, I want you to remind our listeners who Schumer is, Chuck Schumer is. And then secondly, I love what you just said, because I think that is one of the strategies, albeit a very simpleton kind of strategy, but it has proven to be a very effective strategy, that when we come to the table, when a person comes to the table with all sincerity in discussing the severity and the depth of a particular topic, those on the other side tend to be on the progressive side of things. They make fun of it, or they
right.
try to they, minimize
right.
you,
they
the person.
About, right. They, what they try to do is they try to touch on feelings, and they feel that can trump whatever content they essentially would want to downplay.
And the reason why they feel that way is because it has been proven time and time again. And unfortunately, we live in a culture that is very highly emotionally charged. And so sometimes it feels as though fact, you know, who cares? They're irrelevant. I'm having a moment of emotions right now. And unfortunately, the other side of our debate recognizes that and plays on that.
Correct. And I'll give you a little more of an example that occurred about 10 minutes ago. It's going back and forth on Facebook on why Cruz is so superb. And so
we have about 30 seconds. We have about 30 seconds.
Oh, all right. Well, then this might take a little bit longer. So suffice to say, I gave facts and put them on the table. The response was, you're arrogant. And I said, well, anytime you go ad hominem, that means I won the argument.
Yes, exactly right. That is so true.
And Schumer is the senator from New York, senior senator.
Senior senator for New York. Okay, guys, listen, when we come back, Dr. Bob is going to continue updating us on what is happening with this Iranian deal. In the meantime, call in 610-539-TALK, 610-539-TALK.
FB Wealth Management. In Matthew 25, the parable of the 10 talents warns us that not investing the master's talents because of fear is wrong. Doing nothing can be a sin.
So what are the consequences of doing nothing?
In this parable, the first thing we see is that the Lord is not pleased. The one talent is taken away and given to the one that has 10 talents. Finally, the unprofitable servant is cast into outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth.
Wow, that sounds harsh.
It certainly does. Now, none of us is a perfect steward, but if you feel like you are just coasting along and it's time to make some changes, please call our office at 215-723-8999.
MFB Wealth Management, 215-723-8999, on the web at mfbwm.com. Securities and advisory services offered through Genios Wealth Management, member FINRA SIPC.
Chances are there'll never be an emergency ever again. But just in case, let's talk about a plan.
Okay.
Who is going to grab the go bag?
What's a go bag?
It is a bag we do not have that is filled with things we really, really need in an emergency.
Guess we won't have to worry about it then.
Well, this is great. I am so glad that we don't have a plan.
I know.
Winging It is not an emergency plan. Make sure your kids know what to do during an emergency, who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Kings or Parliament could not give the rights essential to happiness. We claim them from a higher source, from the King of Kings and Lord of all the earth. They are not annexed to us by parchments and seals. They are created in us by the decrees of providence which establish the law of our nature. They are born with us, exist with us, and cannot be taken from us by any human power without taking our lives. A quote from John Dickinson, 1804.
Hello and welcome back to It's a New Day with your host Kathy Barnett on 1180 WFYL. Call in at 610-539-TALK, 610-539-8255. Dr. Bob.
Greetings again.
Yes, on the other side of the break, you were telling us about the senior senator from New York, Chuck Schumer, talking against the Iranian deal. So can you tell us what's the update on that?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm up to. I listened to two audio updates on Mondays, which I would like to tout. And I'm also going to tout an event that's going to occur tonight and then work from there in terms of answering with specifics. On 1 o'clock, for 1 hour, Tea Party Patriots call-in gives an update where you can call in or type a question via computer. And Jenny Beth Markin runs it. And I was on yesterday, and I initially congratulated her for her humility and industriousness. I had seen her 5 years ago speak at Arcadia, which is formerly Beaver College in Cheltenham, which is Montgomery County, right near Philly, and praised her and then went into a discussion I'll give you in a moment after I finish the touting. The second update is from 5:30 to 6. And again, there's a limited period of time, 15 minutes for call-in, and this is sponsored by Heritage Action. And it is, again, superb. They summarize, both of them, what's happening in Congress, but also they will bleed into some other context.
How can we call in and listen to this?
Well, you contact both organizations, Tea Party Patriots and Heritage Action, and then you become involved in both. But there's no charge, et cetera, and it is content-laden, let's say superfluous information, because they're always so replete with information. And the other tout is for tonight at 7:30 at a synagogue in Philadelphia, actually suburban Philadelphia, on Old York Road, called Temple Beth Sholem, which is, if anyone knows about the architecture of Frank Lloyd Wright, it's the Mount Sinai version. You can sort of remember that Beth Sholem with S-H-A-L-O-M. It's sponsored by the Zionist Organization of America, and they're going to give an update on what's going on with the content and politics of what's going on with the Iranian deal. That's at 7:30.
So, okay, so 7:30 right. Tonight, and it's going to be
Beth Sholem.
Temple, okay, you
Beth
say
Sholem,
it.
B-E-T-H. S-H-A-L-O-M. It's on Route 611, just north of Philadelphia in Cheltenham Township.
Okay, so guys, Google that. If you would want to be there, if you want to understand what's going on, then you have to do, as Dr. Bob was encouraging us earlier before the break, and that is to get engaged, to become an activist. Not to, and the word activist scares some people. Like, they're thinking they're going to have to, you know, go walking and running and picketing signs and all. But in order to know exactly what it is you're going to do, you first have to start getting engaged. You first have to start becoming aware of what the issues are, what's going on, what's the truth of the matter, because there's so much information that is out there today, and all of it is not true or accurate.
Correct.
And some of it is designed to just keep you spinning around, running after your own tail.
Correct. Informational overload is always dangerous.
You're trying
to be clear as to what really is happening under the radar.
Yeah, so I really like that. So we have that going on at 7:30 p.m. tonight. And then also, Dr. Bob just finished telling us about two call-in where you could just kind of listen and get an update on Mondays at
right.
1 p.m. Tea Party Patriots. Google that and find out what that call-in number is on Mondays. And then you have 5:30 to 6, the Heritage Action. And again, giving you quick spurts of information, no information overload, but you will begin, you know, and maybe initially you don't understand what's going on, you don't understand the language, but it's something that is acquired. It's called immersion. And if you want to learn a new language, you know, they no longer tell you to go into a classroom, take a class for 1 hour once a week to learn a foreign language. They say the best way to learn a foreign language is just to immerse yourself in that, and then by osmosis you begin to pick up on certain things, and you begin
right.
to build a layer.
What you can also do when you become what's called a sentinel is get onto the BLAST email list, and immediately after the event from Heritage Action, you will receive a BLAST email from Betsy, the local regional coordinator, summarizing the bullet points that had already been covered. And then that correlates with information on the website. Same thing with Tea Party Patriots. They were announcing, which hasn't been rolled out yet, perhaps because of something that I said, which I'll tell you about in a minute, they're going to have a major impetus against the Iran deal with information on their website explicitly bullet pointing all its deficiencies. And they said this is something new for them because usually they focused on domestic issues, but this is so important that they had to. So you'll get a lot of ways to get a lot more information when you also interact with them. But let me segue into why I was on the radio yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that I had an article published in what's called The Hill. And you can Google The Hill and put in my name, and the article will pop out, Sklaroff, S-K-L-A-R-O-F-F, Sklaroff. And you can say, you can see the title, which is Fighting the Iranian Deal Capitulation by Litigation. And nobody has been proposing it. And when I raised the issue, Washington lobbyist who was speaking on behalf of the summary of what's going on with Tea Party Patriots was reading the article while I was paraphrasing its import, and he said he's going to carry it to a lot of people on the Hill to see if they can corroborate and implement my idea, because I think otherwise we are doomed.
Yes.
And here's what I mean by that. I was writing in May against the bill that was passed, which is the Corker-Cornyn effort. Coombs, which it was changed from Menendez. And what happened is they changed the voting requirements to stop the Iranian from being viewed as a treaty, which would require confirmation as per Article 2, Section 2, Paragraph 2 of the Senate in the Constitution, to from a two-thirds majority to approve to, after Obama were to veto a rejection, requiring a two-thirds vote to overturn his veto of the rejection. So I didn't like that. And despite yelling from the mountaintops, including having an article in the American Thinker, I didn't have it loud enough voice, I guess, and the bill went through anyway. And a lot of people were wrong on this, without mentioning names, on our side, who felt that we had to do this. And now they're seeing the result, which is instead of being able to block it pretty easily, now essentially it's a battle to try to get, they think, enough Democrats to flip. Well, I have a different idea.
Because right now, okay, so let's just summarize real quick.
Okay.
So right now,
step by step.
Yeah, so right now we need how many votes?
Right now we need to stop it by having essentially not just the 34 votes to block a treaty, but now we need something like 67 votes, which is, you know, take the 53 Republicans, and except for Flake, it looks like we've got them all, and Flake is wavering. We don't know why, perhaps because he has a rhino gene inside. That's Republican in name only, but we digress.
We need 14 Republicans as well.
Yeah, we need a bunch of Democrats.
Democrats.
Right.
And now, okay, so now let's put this in context for some of our listeners. We have about 30 seconds now before we go to another break. And that is, it. You know, with all of the heinous videos coming out with Planned Parenthood right now, you think it would be easy to get enough people to vote to defund it? We only needed 60 votes, and I think we got somewhere like around 53 votes.
And that's because it was not handled properly.
Well, yes, but, I mean, but you're saying we need 67 votes to stop the Iranian deal. We couldn't even get 60 to defund Planned Parenthood. Hold on, we'll be right back.
Working for your liberty right here in Philadelphia, broadcasting freedom shining light throughout the tri-state area. Streaming freedom shining light from Philly to the nations. 1180 shining forth, we are the Freedom Station. WFYN.
Fox News Radio, I'm Joe Chiuro. Nearly two dozen people arrested overnight in Ferguson, Missouri during a fourth night of protests, and there's been some infighting of protesters.
Within the ranks of the protesters, you have seen times when there have been those who have been far more in the way of instigating towards a police department and those who are looking for those to stop it. And then there are almost arguments within those ranks.
Fox's Rich Edson. The protests follow the one-year anniversary of the fatal shooting of Michael Brown. Legionnaires' disease blamed for two more deaths in New York City. Mayor Bill de Blasio proposing new rules on rooftop cooling towers thought to be the source.
Inspections will occur quarterly, and potentially dangerous levels of microbes must be reported to the Department of Health.
The outbreak has now claimed a dozen lives and sickened over 100 people. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Here's Dan Celia with today's Stewardship Moment.
Matthew 6:33 says this, "But seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you." I think this verse has a lot to do with us getting our priorities straight. The words come from Jesus. He said, "Look, you can worry about food or drink or clothing like the non-believer, or you can worry about number one thing." Listen, if you are attempting to be a good steward, we must not forget that in our stewardship, as the great hymn says, we must first turn our eyes upon Jesus.
You've just heard a Stewardship Moment with Dan Celia of Financial Issues Ministry, helping you plan, give, and invest wisely. For more information, log on to financialissues.org. That's financialissues.org.
Help Kiwanis of East Norriton with their Color Kids World campaign. Kiwanis of East Norriton is proud to be partnering with the Montgomery County Norristown Public Library to provide school supplies for students in grades K through 6. From July 15th to August 15th, Kiwanis will be collecting school supplies at these locations: Curves of East Norriton, 38 West Germantown Pike, WFYL, 2400 West Main Street on Jeffersonville Golf Course, Elmwood Park Zoo, 1661 Harding Boulevard, East Norriton Township Building, 2501 Stanbridge Street, Norristown Library, 1001 Pell Street. Items especially needed are crayons, glue sticks, subject notebooks, washable markers, colored pencils, index cards, backpacks. Help us make a difference in kids' lives.
Hi, friends. This is Janet Parshall, host of In the Market, coming to you on Moody Radio. Ever wake up in the morning, turn on the morning news, and you just feel like you're out of focus, not quite sure how you should respond as a follower of Jesus Christ? Well, that's what In the Market is designed to do. We take a look at those headlines. We take a look at that news, but we do it in a markedly different way. We look at it through the lens of Scripture. Why? So you'll go out in the marketplace of ideas for His sake. Join us for In the Market with Janet Parshall.
We are pleased to be adding Janet Parshall to our program schedule Sundays at 12:05, right here on 1180 AM WFYL, working for your liberty. This good day,
it is a gift from you. Hello and welcome back. It's a new day with your host, Kathy Barnett, on 1180 WFYL. Call in at 610-539-TALK. 610-539-TALK. And on the phone with me is Dr. Bob. Before we went to that break, Dr. Bob, you were telling me that you were telling us that in order prior to this new bill that Obama was able to get passed, we only needed 34 votes to stop a treaty. But given that, and again, I don't think any of this is by coincidence, but it's by design. Now, because of this new deal we entered into earlier this year, now instead of just needing 34 votes to block the Iranian deal, we now need 67 votes.
Correct. But there's a caveat here, which basically turns the situation around significantly if other people will abide by it. Now, the challenge, therefore, is not just to have one lobbying day at the end of the month, which is what Tea Party Patriots plan, go to the website for details, at the offices of various federal members of Congress, House, and Senate, but also my attitude is we have to focus on the Republicans, because McConnell in particular has said he'll do everything he can to fight the bill, and I'm giving him a roadmap as to how to do it, and that is called Sue Obama. And this is a huge idea that has not yet been raised, even if some people who are very authoritative have tiptoed towards it. And that includes Alan Dershowitz and a lady named Caroline Glick and a guy named Andrew McCarthy. And except for the article from last week in USA Today from Dershowitz, if you Google my article in The Hill against Sklaroff, Sklaroff, plus The Hill should do it, then you can see the hyperlinks into the articles that were written by others. The bottom line is that I feel we have to sue for the following reason, and that is based on what I consider to be faulty, the decision by the Supreme Court regarding Obamacare, where even though the black letter statute states that the tax deduction would be applicable only to exchanges established by the states, they read into that the states or the federal government, and they based that reading in, called insertion of additional language, which wasn't there, but they call it reading in, upon the concept of congressional intent, which they created.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all right, now we have a congressional intent out there. Well, my attitude is I can document that congressional intent when they passed this bill, the Corker bill, was specifically not related to the idea that you are going to not drop the Security Council Resolution 1929, which allowed for conventional arms to be dropped from the sanctions. Now, I'm going to get rid of the double negatives and say it on a positive level, because I was going retroactive in the way I was phrasing it. When they passed this bill, it was focused on the nukes. It was not based upon issues related to conventional arms. And they signed off on this thing, I think, on July 14th. 1 week prior, on July 7th, both the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Dempsey, and a guy named Ash Carter, who graduated from Abington, who is now the defense secretary, both said that this was not going to deal with any conventional arms. 1 week later, Obama and Curry capitulated on that level as well. So therefore, it is my argument that because they are messaging did not include what ultimately occurred, that bill does not apply to the deal that subsequently was signed off.
And so essentially what you're saying is to use what the Supreme Court has now created in congressional intent
right.
against them. So use
right.
their own strategizing to get
correct.
Because
correct.
Because the Supreme Court used, they made up a new law or a new perspective of reading the law, and that is
right.
congressional intent
right.
in order to allow Obamacare to continue as it is. And so now you're saying, well, let's use their own weapons against them.
Right. There are biblical ideas associated therewith, you might say.
Yeah. And so, carrying on with your thought, because and using that congressional intent against them, because when we initially had the vote to change on how to treat a treaty, moving it from 34 votes being needed to now 67 votes being needed, we did it with the intent that this new Iranian deal would only focus on nukes. In
right.
fact, we know that it includes more than nukes. It includes
right.
conventional
right.
arms as well.
And they specifically, explicitly stated in all of their messaging up until 1 week beforehand that they were not going to discuss that, and it was not going to be part of the deal.
And now, conventional arms is a problem because of, did you say a 1979?
Security Council Resolution 1929 explicitly
okay.
has sanctions on Iran regarding conventional arms. That
right, exactly.
Lifted.
And so now, okay, and now it was lifted? When was it lifted?
It was lifted in conjunction with this deal, which was a shocker, because all the messaging up until then said that they were only going to deal with the nukes.
Okay,
so,
and now it was lifted as a part of the deal. It wasn't
right.
lifted prior to the deal.
Right. Now, there's something in legal terms called severability that I have to explain in order to understand the bottom line of the legal component. If you have an agreement and you have a severability clause, what that means is that if one part of the agreement is tossed, the rest of it survives.
Right.
There is no severability either in the bill that was passed nor in the actual agreement. So therefore, the whole agreement is covered by the whole deal. So now, if that's the case, the whole deal in this case being the bill, that means that if any part of what was passed is viewable as applicable to any part of the deal, then the entire deal is either acceptable or not based upon the bill that was passed in May. So the bottom line, therefore, is that since I view the deal as exceeding what was passed in May, then that relegates it back to being a treaty. Now, in the article last, and therefore requiring a vote of 2/3 as per Article 2, Section 2, Paragraph. Now, the article that was written by Dershowitz cites an Ogden case in which the differentiation between an executive agreement versus a treaty is predicated upon whether or not it has economic implications versus whether or not they have long-term implications. The economic ones would be the executive agreement, which potentially would be killed off on January 20th of 2017, versus a treaty that is viewed as having long-term implications. Now, of course, from our perspective, the whole thing is and was a treaty at jump shot.
Okay,
and therefore
should be
covered that way.
And so right now, you're making a distinction between a treaty and a deal.
Right.
Okay, so what
agreement.
Is an executive agreement and a treaty? So what is
right.
the difference between something being a treaty versus an executive deal? Because as of right now, this new Iranian deal is an executive deal, right?
Well, that's what they're trying to portray it as being.
Mm-hmm.
But we view it as a treaty all along, and therefore we would want to toss the implications of what happened in May, treat it as a treaty, and therefore if Obama, which he would predictably do, it would reject the way that I want to view it, which would require ratification by 2/3, then we litigate.
And it became a treaty
specifically. It became, in their mind, an executive agreement.
Right.
And they chucked the idea of it being a treaty. And a lot of people think that's because some of the Republican leadership likes to play cutesy with Obama. And people like Ted Cruz have been pointing that out, which we haven't gotten to the debate yet.
No,
but,
we haven't.
But
because
the point
this is really good.
He writes against the Washington cartel. And the cartel includes McConnell. So therefore, I want a Republican groundswell to develop ASAP to force McConnell to live by his word. He said he's going to do everything he can to stop
mm-hmm.
it. That means I want him to sue Obama, claiming what I'm saying.
That this, this is a treaty and not an executive agreement, which was based on congressional intent that this was going to be an executive deal slash agreement.
Which tosses the bill that was passed in May and relegates everything to the treaty status, specifically because the bill in May did not envision the release of the conventional arms limit.
Exactly. And so now we need 34 votes versus 67 votes.
Right. But when we don't get what we want relative to what Obama wants, because we're going to have a hard time getting all the Dems to come along, and I'm sure that Valerie Jarrett in the White House is counting votes accordingly, then we have to sue after Obama signs off on it, signs off the veto. We have 10 days before a pocket veto would or would not be sustained. That's the interval when the suit should be filed in federal court, and there is a precedent from the 1930s where a bill challenged on this level has gone right to the SCOTUS, right to the Supreme Court of the United States, without having to go through the federal court and the appellate system. So whatever a district court might do would be appealed and would be go up to the Supreme Court anyway. Meanwhile, the thing would be stopped, and then my hope would be that if Iran sees that it was stopped and 60 days have gone past and they have 90 days to start with their first compliance, they may say, well, we were not going to be required to comply with our initial shutdown efforts.
Awesome.
And if that's the case, then the whole deal goes belly up. We don't give them $150 billion.
And it's all moot.
Correct.
So listen, Dr. Bob, thank you. Now, when we come back on the other side of break, Dr. Bob, we have about less than 15 minutes, and we want to kind of get on to the presidential debate.
I have one more point to make when you come back.
Oh, my goodness. It's so much. Guys, listen, call in at 610-539-TALK. 610-539-TALK. We're going to put a bow on the Iranian conversation when we come back.
All right.
Once all the experts, political pundits, and philosophers declare their best advice for life, confusion and disagreement will still remain. On the other hand, King Solomon, the wisest man, shared advice that, if heeded, would provide direction and certainty. It would change the world. Hello, I'm Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network. In Ecclesiastes chapter 12, Solomon said, "Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the entire duty of man, because God will bring every action into divine review with every secret thing, and he will determine whether it was good or evil." That's right. Every deed, every action, and every thought, public or private, is being recorded by God Almighty, the great judge of all mankind. Everything. Nothing hidden. Nothing covered. Nothing secret. How much do you fear God and keep his command? I'm Sam Rohr of the American Pastors Network, asking you, whose advice are you heeding? Some human expert or God, who will judge even the experts?
Sign up as a partner at papastors.net.
Hey, Grandma, can you help me with my Common Core lesson on the Constitution? But the only part we're reading in 8th grade is the preamble and the First Amendment. I wonder when we'll get to study the rest of it. Didn't you say our founding fathers were wise patriots and wrote the Constitution and the Bill of Rights to protect our freedom? This Common Core book we're reading says our founding fathers were racist and they didn't think women or blacks should ever be allowed to vote. She says, "we the people," didn't really mean you and me, but some rich white guys. That just makes me feel terrible about our country. We need to change things.
Oh, honey, that's not true at all. Our country is the greatest country the world has ever seen, and our founding fathers worked hard to be fair to everyone. I'm going to call our school board and our state board of education and ask why they allow Common Core and this book in your school.
Call your representatives now and ask them to stop Common Core and restore local control. Pennsylvanians Against Common Core brought you this message. Go to nopacommoncore.com or call 484-678-2236.
Jeff Bush here from Informed Family Financial Services, located right here in Norristown. Are you nearing the decision about Social Security? Are you aware of the unique claiming strategies available to you when it comes to your Social Security benefits? Don't make a snap decision. Give me a call today at 610-630-4495 to schedule your no-obligation consultation. That's 610-630-4495. Representative of USA Financial Securities, member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor.
These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. Thomas Paine, The American Crisis, 1776.
It is a gift from you.
Good morning and welcome back to It's a New Day with your host, Kathy Barnett, on 1180 WFYL. Call in at 610-539-TALK, 610-539-TALK. Dr. Bob, in this segment, we have a little bit less than 10 minutes, so I want to get something in on the GOP debate.
That's and then right. You want a bow on it, right?
And then we can. Yeah, here comes the bow. Okay, what's
right,
the bow on the Iranian?
Night, I saw the Mission Impossible movie, and without revealing the plot, which is fantastic, and you got to see it in IMAX. The acting is stupendous. The action scenes are overwhelming, etc. Even my kid was impressed, and his girlfriend, my ex. So the bottom line is that at one point there is discussion of international terrorism. They have a computer readout of all the billions of dollars that are suddenly going to be released in order to allow for an explosion of worldwide terrorism being financed. That reference, I don't know how that got into the movie, but it was prescient regarding what's going on with the Iran deal.
That
we
is
stop
so
it and we
true.
Get that $150 billion held
$150 billion released into the hands of Iran, the very people that before the deal was made and after the deal was made, they were in the streets with their Ayatollah leading them, which is the most supreme leader in Iran, chanting, leading the chant, death to America. Death to Israel, death to America, calling us a big Satan. And our government, our president, and those a part of his administration wants to give them $150 billion right off the bat.
That's just the United States. There's a lot more overseas that's been
yes.
placed. So that's why I refer to them as evil. And if
they are. They are the epitome
me,
of
fine.
Evil. I mean, they are the epitome of evil and very barbaric. It's just barbaric. And there's one of the things I like that Donald Trump said in the presidential debate was that we don't have time for tone. And it is so
when they're chopping off heads.
When they're chopping off when people are because of course people are saying about Donald Trump, oh, he's so unpresidential like. Oh, he's so a coof, and we never know what's going to come out of his mouth. And someone had talked to him about, or I think it was Jeb Bush that said, I take issue with his tone on how he says things. And to that, Donald Trump said, when people are chopping off heads, we don't have time for tone.
Right.
And I love that comment. And I think that that is the reason why so many people are rushing to support Trump. And Trump is, let me just go on record by saying I would never vote for Trump unless he won the primary and it was between him and Hillary. And even then I would take issue with it. But so I am not advocating Trump by any
Let me put what you just said into context. It's very simple. First of all, it's not going to be Hillary for reasons we can discuss later. She's going to get nailed either by the courts and or by Trey Gowdy next
you
year.
You know what? I hope so. But you know what? But we were talking last week. You know what? She is such a narcissist. All this stuff that has come out on her, you would think she would say, let me just go in hiding so some of this pressure would come off of me.
She has been. That's why the debates, for example, aren't going to be held till October in the Democrat side because they want to try to help her hide.
But people, i.e. the media, is still referencing her as the number one Democratic candidate.
But even
the Republican candidates kept referencing her
I know,
as
but
well.
There's also now increasing discussion about Biden, but I have a dark horse. I think Bloomberg might run. Oops. Well, throw a little wrench there for
gotta throw that in there.
Right.
But going back to Donald Trump for a moment,
yes.
I think the reason why he is leading the poll by several basis points now.
I understand that.
And I think the thing, but you have so many Republicans that are coming out trying to shun him, trying to get him excluded
right.
from the base.
And you shouldn't do that, but you simply listen to him, note the absence of specifics, and then relegate him to the proper position, which is behind Ted Cruz, who has the same channeling of populist ideas, but doesn't shoot from the lip. And specifically, for example, when Donald Trump came out against Pamela Geller's efforts to have essentially free speech, speech freedom as a major concern, that was an example of where he errs when he is too impetuous. So there is a double-edged sword there. But on the other hand, some people like what he's saying. But well, if you just capture it, people aren't going to vote for him.
You know what? I mean, but here's the thing. And I completely agree with you. I do not disagree on one point that you just made. And again, I am not advocating Donald Trump whatsoever. But I think what we tend to see in the Republican and the conservative movement, as well as even in the church, is that when someone rises up and we oppose them, we go about trying to just obliterate the person, trying to shun the person, try to throw them out. We don't want to hear anything you have to say. Let's suppress the person instead of saying, okay, now what is this person saying that is resonating so well?
Right.
Let me mimic what I need to mimic and let me throw away what is useless to me. But
subsume it instead. Right.
Yes. And what is resonating with people is the fact that whether he has true courage and a backbone or not, that's irrelevant because, as I said earlier, people really don't care about the facts. They're just all caught up in the emotion. But what is resonating with voters is that he appears to be someone
who speaks his mind.
He's unapologetic. He doesn't say one thing and then come back 2 minutes later saying, oh, I had a misspeak, or oh, I'm sorry. No, he says it, and he's saying a lot of what the majority of us in the conservative movement are thinking. And so I earnestly feel that at the more, you know, because Red State just disinvited him.
Right.
I know the details
on that, too.
Yes. And I think, you know, I mean, and it's foolishness for the reason that they
I can go back and forth on the timeline and explain exactly what happened. How much time do we have on that?
We have 2 minutes. So
I can do it in 1 minute. OK, he comes out with his, let's say, ambiguous quote regarding whether or not Megan was on her period when she was asking questions.
No, but you know what? I mean, but you know what? But that's a lot of reading into it because
it's not because he was saying the blood was coming from her eyes. And wherever.
Okay, now that could be a misspeak, right? Because his people came back and said, whatever.
So then the people, Eric Carson, called the campaign manager and asked for a clarification. And the campaign manager said, blood from eyes, blood from eyes, blood from eyes, and didn't mention anything else for all night. So then that's when he said, you know
I think we are really really pulling at hairs.
Things. And then therefore he said at the Red State Convention or gathering, I don't want my daughters in the room with this guy because of his sexism. Now, what he said in retrospect was I was referring to her nose or her ears or her mouth.
I mean, right. But the fact that she's a woman, we immediately, here is his statement. He said, you could see there was blood coming out of her eyes, referencing Megyn Kelly.
Yeah.
Blood coming out of her wherever. So again, you could see there was blood coming out of her eyes, blood coming out of wherever. But now, immediately, we took that and
because the discussion was related to sexism and feminism. And so, therefore, that's where he may have slipped. And what I would have done if I had been in his shoes, I would have told my campaign manager, look, I may have slipped, but this is what I meant. Friday night, instead of letting it live till Saturday when he was supposed to appear.
But you know what? I mean, I have seen people, this one reporter was talking about, you know, I cannot remember the details of it, but this particular guy that had an assault on a police station, he loaded his van up with bombs and went through the front of the building of the police station. And she called him a hero. And she spent maybe about, 2 minutes kind of saying how much of a hero this guy was. The next day she come back and say, oh, I misspoke.
Oops.
Now she had about five minutes of misspeak. Donald Trump had one word of a misspeak, and
he had all night to fix it.
Okay. Well, Dr. Bob, we're getting ready to go head up onto a break. Thank you so much. I'm going to have you back if you don't mind, and I'm going to tell people where they can go out on the hill and find you as well. Thank you, Dr. Bob.
Bye-bye.
Hello and welcome back. It's a new day. Praise the Lord, it's a new day for some of us, right? Because yesterday was horrendous. And now we have a new day on 1180 WFYL. I'm your host, Kathy Barnett, and the call-in number is 610-539-TALK, 610-539-TALK. And guys, I have, you know, this is now the section of the program where we spotlight an organization in our community that are up to doing some big things. And so this one right here, moms, I know dads too, but moms, get ready. You're going to want to know this woman we have in here with us today. Again, that number is 610-539-TALK. We only have a little bit of time. So if you want to get in and get some questions to her, then you want to go ahead and start calling now. 610-539-TALK. And the woman that I have in here with me today is Cynthia Worth. Currently, Cynthia works with AIMS, A-I-M-S, which stands for Academic and Individual Mentoring Services. She works with families concerning the needs of their children with learning differences. This may take the form of accommodations and modifications in school, transition programs, and preparation for post-secondary education, and employment or college and workplace coaching. Mrs. Worth has taught in grade 6 through college in New York, Pennsylvania, and Arizona. And I loved what you said earlier, Cynthia. First of all, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yes. And I loved how you said when you and I were talking during the break, when I was asking, so what exactly do you do? And you said, I'm kind of like a life coach. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Okay. I'm not a tutor. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm more like a guide, a GPS. There's a course that is set by the parents and the student, and usually that's through interests and talents and dreams for the future. I see it as my job to work with the family to help them attain those goals and, if necessary, to change a course and try to be as patient as that GPS voice. There's no judgment, although my GPS often wants to tell me that I've lost my mind because where am I going with the directions? But it's mainly to be non-judgmental and just allow the child and the family to say, this is where we want to go, and talk about how we're going to get there.
Yeah, and so now what I love about this is because, as I said to you, I know two such parents whose children have learning disabilities or learning differences. And so although they're not in school yet, they've already have been identified as and have gone through the process of creating an IEP.
Yes.
And IEP stands for?
Individual Educational Program.
Right, which is something that is, I guess, the state and the parent come together to create a learning guide.
Actually, it should be driven by the parent, and it is not the state per se. It is the public school.
Yes, public school, i.e.
right,
state, is what
right.
I'm thinking.
If you're receiving federal funds, so if you're either public or charter, an IEP is mandated. I would like the parents to know that if you choose a private school, either a faith-based school or another school that is not receiving federal funds, they may have a learning plan, but the IEP does not have to exist.
Right.
If you're in a public or a charter school and your child has been identified, either because you have begun the identification process,
right,
or someone else is identifying it, the IEP is what will drive the education. But remember, a parent does not have to accept special education services. It's not mandated.
Right. And now, but one of the things that grabbed my heart is because I know these two particular parents and they both look absolutely exhausted. And one seems more aware of the various services and programs and, you know, and she's more engaged. And the other parent, she just seems so exhausted, like she's behind the eight ball. And one of the things that I, and I'm so going to give them your information, but one of
Thank
the
you.
Things that you do, you were explaining to me, is that you will come alongside the those parents, kind of like a private coach.
Yes.
And kind of come alongside those parents and walk through that. And I cannot think of anything more helpful to parents, because I'm looking at these two moms. I can see the loss of expectations.
Yes.
You know, I think you had called it like the loss of a dream child.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and what parent, what mother especially cannot identify, or father cannot identify with the hopes and the expectations that you have for that child when they're in your womb, and then they come out and it's something very different, and you begin to notice differences, and you come alongside them.
Yes, and I'm glad you're stressing coming alongside. The real experts in this field are the mothers and the fathers and the grandparents and the families of the children who live with the children 24/7, have their heartstrings wrapped around the child, and will be there no matter what. They're not interested in whether or not the test scores meet the state averages. They're not looking for the old expectations of what's going to be on the refrigerator to show off. It's how do I get my love to be there for my child so that he or she will have the best life possible.
Amen.
Especially being independent. And that's a lot of parents fear.
And I love how you said the greatest experts, because I have literally have had my son's teacher tell me he is the controller of his classroom, i.e. telling me to back off and that his say is the last say. And we do have that kind of culture in our education system where they centrally want to push the parents away, but you were telling me something different, that no, the parent is the one that should be driving the education. So talk to us about that.
Okay, well, an IEP is a great example. It is supposed to be driven by the parent in conjunction with the team. And that means that when you walk into that very first meeting, it is supposed to be a planning meeting. What often happens, because we become intimidated, I'll give you what the scenario looks like. It's hopefully two people who are have a relationship with the child, know the child, and have the legal right to be in that meeting. When you walk in, there is a table, and there can be as many as 12 people representing the educational agency, or the LEA.
Wow.
And you feel like, my gosh, and you either get, it's a fight or flight. You're either going to flee and just sit down and listen to what everyone has to say, or you can automatically go in and say, okay, I'm going to do battle. Neither one of those is going to give you the best outcome. You can gently take charge and control, ask everyone to introduce themselves, and realize that you can be the persuasive element that lets the team know that you are there to enable them to help your child. They are not there to tell you what to do. And we often, especially the older generation, I grew up in the 50s, we have often looked at the schools as the experts.
Yes.
And I need to say that many, what shall I say, non-typical populations, because I've dealt a lot with Native American population, often begin to feel like they don't have a say.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. we need to walk in without that mindset. This is my child. I'm not here to do battle. I'm here to advocate. We'll do battle if necessary. But I am going to try to get everyone to see things the way I do and see my vision.
Yes, and that's where you come in to help, because I would assume it would be very intimidating, and I am an A-type, aggressive, let me take that heel kind of person, and yet I would find that to be a little overwhelming to have to walk. I mean, like you're already exhausted, because generally
yes,
with
yes.
learning differences, you have some behavioral
yes.
Kind of issues as well, sometimes, not all the times, but then, you know, so you're exhausted, or at least, you know, in my experience of looking at, you know, various people that I know whose kids have been identified as having a learning difference, you know, they're exhausted, a lot of exasperation, you know, the dream child, mm-hmm. you know, and I can so relate to that. Mm-hmm. You have so many hopes and dreams, and then you begin to have to try to modify. And I think you
yes.
even said, like, have a grieving moment.
Yes.
For those things. And then you walk into this room. You don't really know what to expect. You're not a subject matter expert on all things education. And then there's a table of 12.
Yes.
And now what you probably, it's invaluable what you would offer coming alongside those parents.
Well, thank you. The amount of jargon is amazing and overwhelming. There are, it's an alphabet soup of letters such as IEP, LEA, SED, ASCD, TBI.
I'm already lost.
And so as a parent, you're saying, when has my little flesh and blood child become this paper doll of educational jargon that I cannot understand? And the first thing a parent has to realize, if you don't know, ask. An explanation is owed to you.
Or what they can also do is call and get in contact with Miss Cynthia Worth. Again, she is representing AIMS Academic and Individual Mentoring Services. You can reach them by calling 610-631-1671. Let me say it again. 610-631-1671. Or you can contact them by going to www.academicmentoringservices.com. AcademicMentoringServices.com. Again, Cynthia, thank you so much for being here.
Well, you're welcome. Tylee, my pleasure. And, you know, ask. If you don't know, ask.
The parable of the 10 talents warns us that not investing the master's talents because of fear is wrong. Doing nothing can be a sin.
So what are the consequences of doing nothing?
In this parable, the first thing we see is that the Lord is not pleased. The one talent is taken away and given to the one that has 10 talents. Finally, the unprofitable servant is cast into outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth.
Wow, that sounds harsh.
It certainly does. Now, none of us is a perfect steward. But if you feel like you are just coasting along and it's time to make some changes, please call our office at 215-723-8999.
MFB Wealth Management, 215-723-8999, on the web at mfbwm.com. Securities and advisory services offered through Genios Wealth Management, member FINRA SIPC.
If you're looking for a healthy treat today, why not head down to TCBY Frozen Yogurt? It's located in the King of Prussia Mall, the Plaza section opposite L.L. Bean. They have shakes and smoothies and hot fudge sundaes and, yes, even mint chocolate chunk frozen yogurt. And if you tell them you're a listener of WFYL, receive a 10% discount. So today, why not? Head on down to TCBY Frozen Yogurt located in the King of Prussia Mall.
There are many ways to start a fire, but one sure way to put it out. Learn how you can do your part. SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Sponsored by the U.S. Forest Service Ad Council and your state forester.
The liberty of the press consists in the right to publish with impunity truth, with good motives, for justifiable ends. To disallow, it is fatal. Alexander Hamilton, 1804.
I know that this good day. It is a gift from you.
Hello and welcome back. It's a new day with your host, Kathy Barnett, on 1180 WFYL. Again, you can call in at 610-539-TALK, 610-539-8255. And again, we're continuing on with our segment that we call the Spotlight, where we spotlight individuals and organizations that are in our community that are up to some really good stuff, and you need to hear about it. So right now I have in studio with me, and I'm so excited. I was actually trying to get him on last week and this week and maybe next week, because when I saw his area of expertise, it's like, you know what? This is what we need. We need to be engaged on why it is we have the greatest country ever and what the law says about that. So anyway, I have in here with me Patrick, pronounce your last name.
Coker.
Coker. That's what I thought. Just didn't want to make a slip up. But we have Patrick Coker in here with us today. Patrick is a liberty-minded Republican activist from southeastern Pennsylvania. He grew up in Delaware County, Pennsylvania, the eldest son, who founded the Bill of Rights Bicentennial Committee in 1991. Did you or your father? Or did you or your parents?
My parents. Yeah.
Okay.
Eric
so your Eric and Karis Coker founded the Bill of Rights Bicentennial Committee in 1991. And what is the Bill of Rights Bicentennial Committee?
Well, they founded it in 1991 was the 200th anniversary of the ratification of the Bill of Rights.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it was my mom. She was upset that nothing was being done to celebrate that. It was a bicentennial date that was passing really without hardly any recognition. So she started, I guess you'd say, agitating for some sort of celebration and got a few things going. Now there's several events that happen on December 15th every year to commemorate that around the country. I'm aware of at least three, but theirs is the original. There's a banquet every year, usually out in Lancaster County, but somewhere in this area.
Now, is this a federally recognized day of celebration?
December 15th is the day that Virginia ratified the Bill of Rights, mm-hmm. which Virginia was the ninth state, and that made it illegal addition. It finalized the addition of those amendments to the Constitution.
Right, exactly.
So the 15th of December is the day that the Bill of Rights became the law.
Okay, yeah. Great. And so now, and is that something that as a nation we already recognize federally? Is it on the calendar that this is something we recognize?
You won't see it on the calendar.
Oh, okay. Oh.
Now, the federal government would like for us to forget that there's a Bill of Rights, I think. But.
Why do you think that's so? Why do you think they want us to forget we have these things called Bill of Rights? And one of the things I love when I read about the founders and I read some of their letters and some of their, and you know, some kind of like the way they thought about their freedoms, and we actually see it in the writings of our Constitution as well, is that these Bill of Rights is not something that the government gives to people, but it's something that recognizes the inalienable rights that have been endowed on individuals. Like,
that's,
you know,
exactly right.
You know, the state does not tell us what we can say, what we can't say, who we can say it to, if we can gather together as people. But the government just recognizes, hey, people have that right to, you know, to have freedom of speech, right? As long as they're not inciting riots, like, you know, you're in a crowded theater and someone screams fire, you know, nothing that's going to cause mayhem. But for the most part, they recognize people have a right to protect themselves. People have a right not to have soldiers just walk in their home and, you know, and just set up camp. But today's society, not only does our government feel as though they are the giver of freedoms and rights, but I'm beginning to sense many Americans also look to the government to tell them, can I do this, sir, ma'am,
yes,
massa, can I do this, can I not do this? Talk to us about that.
Well, that's true. You said that it was the government recognizing these rights, but actually the reason the Bill of Rights are in the Constitution is because people were afraid the government was not going to recognize them.
Mm-hmm.
When the Constitution was first written, it was replacing the Articles of Confederation, which really, there was a very weak federal government at that time. And people were very afraid of strengthening it because they didn't trust. There was a fundamental distrust of government in
which
the country
is,
that time.
Which I think is healthy.
Yes.
Today, we have a population that believes our government is our friend. You know, Obama, you know, he's very charismatic. You know, he just very kind of like, I'm of the people. And people think, oh, well, that's my friend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, they're friendly. But that shouldn't, I think that's very dangerous for us to feel that the government is our friend.
There are friendly people that go into government, but the very nature of government is its force. Like Washington said, government is like fire. It's a dangerous servant and a terrible master. And that's
wow.
That's a good description.
Say
of
that.
It.
I like that. Now, who said this?
George Washington.
George Washington
the
said the government is like a fire.
Yes.
It's a dangerous servant.
And a fearful master,
and a
I think,
fearful
is the exact
master.
Quote. Yes.
I mean, but I think that is so true because, yes, although the people in and of themselves can be generally friendly people, but the nature of getting into that position and the fact of who America is as a world force, it gives a lot of power. Power can be very addicting. You get power, you want more power. And so I think
think about it. Government is force. That's all that it is. We like to think of it as something a little nicer than that, but it's not reason, it's not charity, it's not any of these other things. Fundamentally, government is force. And I actually had some notes about this later on, but one of the things we tend to forget, when a law is passed, it's just created a crime.
Mm.
Every single law that's on the books criminalizes either an action or an inaction, you know, some sort of behavior. That's the only purpose of law, really.
You know, I mean, I'm sitting here pausing because I'm thinking, I think that's very profound, because depending upon what kind of government we have in office, you know, we can have a government, as the Word of God says in the Book of Romans, that recognizes that they're the moral law giver. And so then they go about making laws that recognizes the good and the bad, and they want to protect people from going down the bad road. So they protect, so they create laws that will, you know, recognize that there's a bad and there are going to be consequences to that. But what happens when you get a bad government, or a government that is, that does not recognize that there's a moral right and wrong, but that everything is relative and we can just kind of make it up as we go?
It's ugly. I would say that's the norm for most governments throughout history.
And I think that that's where we have, we've transitioned in our own government, that man is the center of
Absolutely.
All things, and that there's nothing greater than man's happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, but I think that's really interesting that you would say that, that when government creates a law, they immediately create, how did you say it?
A law creates a crime.
Yeah, that a law creates a crime. And depending upon if we have a good law or we have something like the Supreme Court's decision not too long ago legalizing same-sex marriage, and now the laws that will come after that, that you have to bake a cake or you can't say anything, these are going to become laws. We already see local governors or local politicians putting gag orders on people not to speak out against homosexuality. So it begins to criminalize. So awesome, but I think we may have digressed. Let's go back to the bill of, see, I'm gonna have to have you back on for just to kind of talk about this, because you're just throwing out good food for thought, and it just kind of make one who's a thinker just like, wow, that's really interesting. I never thought of it that way. But let's kind of go back a little bit and let's talk about the Bill of Rights. Why do we even have a Bill of Rights?
Well, like I said, there was a tremendous amount of distrust of this new constitution when it was presented to the states for ratification. And one of the Bill of Rights actually come from several of the states when they ratified the constitution. There was a lot of debate and a lot of arguing about it. The states that ratified it, a number of them included in their ratification document a list of suggested amendments, which really were boiled down to the Bill of Rights. And they said, we accept the new constitution. We want to be part of this union under the new constitution, but we don't think it's protecting the rights of the people enough, and we'd like to see these things added to it. And there was a very interesting argument that took place over that issue.
Thank you so much. We're going to pick this back up because this is so interesting. It's a new day. See you in a minute.
Lift my voice. Broadcasting freedom shining light throughout the tri-state area. Streaming freedom shining light from Philly to the nations. 1180 shining forth, we are the Freedom Station. WFYN.
Did you just look down at your phone? You did it again, didn't you? You know, you're flying down the road in a 3-ton hunk of steel, and a text takes your eyes off the road for an average of 5 seconds. At 55 miles per hour, that's long enough to travel the length of a football field and cause some serious damage. Turn it off. Trust me. Whatever it is, you'll live.
Learn more at StopTextStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
What would an extra $250 a month mean to you? For some, it's a little financial breathing room. For others, it's a car payment, a home repair, or help with college tuition. Hi, I'm Jay Farner, president of Quicken Loans, and I've got some great news if you're looking to save money on your mortgage. All it takes is a simple phone call to Quicken Loans at 800-QUICKEN to see if you qualify for the government's Home Affordable Refinance Program, or HARP. Folks who refinance with HARP can save an average of $250 a month. That's $3,000 a year. Our home loan experts fully understand the HARP guidelines, and they'll walk you through our streamlined process. And for 5 years in a row now, J.D. Power has ranked Quicken Loans highest in the nation in customer satisfaction. And this year, for the first time, they've also ranked us highest in mortgage servicing. Call 800-QUICKEN. or visit quickenloans.com.
Visit jdpower.com for award information. Important terms and conditions apply. Call us for cost information. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states and MLS number 3030.
Hey, Grandma, I'm confused. We're reading an article the New York Times wrote in 1999 in my Common Core book about the fall of the Berlin Wall. Didn't you tell me Ronald Reagan was mostly responsible for the fall of the Soviet Union?
Well, yes, I did.
Well, right here in the article, it says Mikhail Gorbachev did that. When I told them I thought it was Ronald Reagan, my teacher said no, that he was a president then, but he was just a good salesman. It was Gorbachev who was the great reformer who transformed the world. Boy, I'm glad they talked about that, because I would have gotten it wrong on the test.
Oh, honey, that was just an article from an old biased newspaper. I was there, and you can trust me. Oh, what are they going to teach you next? These Common Core lessons are awful.
Learn more about the Federal Common Core and PA Core standards and call your representatives today and ask them to stop the national takeover of education. Go to knowpacommoncore.com or call Richard at 484-678-2236. Pennsylvanians Against Common Core brought you this message.
This good day, it is a gift from you.
Hello and welcome back. It's a new day with your host, Kathy Barnett, on 1180 WFYL. You can call in at 610-539-TALK, 610-539-TALK. And we have in here with us today Patrick Coker, who is an activist. He's a normal American citizen that is looking around him and saying, how can I, what role can I play? That's that. Now, he didn't tell me this. This is just my summation of the person. And I love this aspect because so many of us is like, okay, well, well, what can I do? Who am I? But he is taking his wealth of knowledge and just wanted to bring it and to share it with you guys to kind of remind you of who we are, why we have who we are as Americans, why we have this thing called the Bill of Rights. And you had said earlier we have a government that may not really recognize the fact that we have, you know, these inalienable rights. And I love, you know, even at the very beginning, we were talking about, you know, the point of the Bill of Rights. And I had made the insertion that we, you know, when you look at the founding fathers' writings and things like that, just on their mindset of who they were as people, that they recognize that that our freedoms are not something that are given to us by the state, but it is something that has been already endowed on us because we're people. But that and that the government should just recognize this. And then you went a step further to say, but then the Bill of Rights were their way of ensuring that we can have a barrier of protection between the government and the people, making sure the government recognized people have these rights.
Sure. So the purpose of the Constitution was to limit the federal government. It was supposed to say list everything that the federal government was allowed to do. And beyond that, the federal government had no authority. And that's actually the reason for I mentioned there was quite an argument about whether we even needed a Bill of Rights. Many of the founders opposed a Bill of Rights because they said if you write this Constitution and say this is all the government may legitimately do on a federal level, and then we start listing, oh, by the way, and the government may not do this and this and this and this, they said it weakens the correct understanding of the Constitution as a limiting framework that the government can't go beyond. They lost that argument. Madison himself argued against a Bill of Rights on those grounds, but recognized that the Constitution was not going to be ratified unless people were felt a little safer about the new government. So he agreed to work for a Bill of Rights, and he's often referred to as the father of the Bill of Rights. That title more probably belongs to Patrick Henry, if anybody, who opposed the Constitution, but his opposition forced Madison to agree to introduce a Bill of Rights at the first session of Congress.
Yeah. And now, I mean, I find that to be very interesting because, if our founders, let's say Madison and those who opposed the Bill of Rights, they did not want a Bill of Rights because they believe, well, hey, this is sufficient enough, the Constitution as it stands, that the government can only do so much.
Right.
But people wanted added protection or they wanted the government to further recognize that there are certain rights that are to be protected and not infringed upon. And they didn't list every right, you know, like I can garden in my own garden if I want to, or I can take a shower and not take. But they were very specific in their original Bill of Rights of kind of itemizing rights. And I often say to people, the First Amendment is not is not there, is not number one by coincidence.
Right.
Because if you don't have the number one Bill of Rights, then you don't, then the others do not apply. So why is it that they structured it? I mean, like, did they have a thought as to how they were structuring?
Yes,
the rights.
It was never intended to be a comprehensive list of inalienable rights. It was a list of the rights they felt the government was most likely to violate.
Hmm.
And so the Ninth and Tenth
Amendments. Did you guys hear that, or did that go over your heads? That the list of Bill of Rights, it was not intended to be an all-encompassing list, but it was to list those things that the government was more than likely to infringe upon.
Yeah.
And is that not where we are
absolutely
today? Mm-hmm. I mean, attacking number one and number two. So what's the first Bill of Rights?
Well, the first one, obviously, the First Amendment deals with freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of association, freedom of the press. I think they're all really important, and frankly, it's not just the First Amendment that's and the Second Amendment that are under attack today, although those are really obvious. But I would say most of them are being consistently violated by this federal government on a regular basis. But, you know, if we're looking at the First Amendment specifically, there's people throw around the phrase separation of church and state. That's not in the Constitution. It's
right.
Not in the Bill of Rights. And one way that we can understand, when Congress, when they wrote those words, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise, those words are really a shortening of what the states in their ratification documents were asking for as a protection against the establishment of religion. And so it's instructive to look back at those ratification documents and see what the states themselves said. And three of the ratification documents from the states used these exact words: religion, or the duty which we owe to our Creator and the manner of discharging it, can be directed only by reason and conviction, not by force and violence. And therefore, all men have an equal, natural, and unalienable right to the free exercise of religion according to the dictates of conscience. And no particular religious sect or society ought to be favored or established by law in preference to others.
So religion can only be entered into by reason and conviction and not force
right
upon someone.
And that's an obvious thing if you think about it. You cannot force someone to believe. You can force them to say they believe, but you can't force someone to actually believe anything.
But now we have, you know, one of the things I've heard President Obama and Hillary Clinton and several others say is that, you know what, listen, if you want your religion, you can keep your religion, kind of like Obamacare. But you're going to practice that religion within the four walls of your church. And then when you come out, you need to assimilate into the rest of the culture.
Mm-hmm.
Would you call that an infringement on our first right? Why?
Well,
because they're telling us we can go into the building and worship like we want to.
When Jefferson, in his letter to the Banbury Baptist Association, used the words "a wall of separation between church and state," he was speaking very consciously. And it's not the separation of faith and government or faith and politics. It's a separation of church and state.
Oh,
he was saying,
make that distinction for us. So what's the
difference
between
church is organized
faith?
Religion,
mm-hmm,
and state is the government. And he was saying that those two have separate spheres and should not be allowed to interfere one with the other. So it's protecting the church from the state. It's protecting the state from an organized church. See, they were coming from the context of European governments, which all had established state religions.
Yes.
And you were forced to pay taxes to support the Anglican Church or the Lutheran Church or the Presbyterian Church in Scotland, whatever it was. Those established state churches were supported through taxation. And so the founders were saying, we're not going to have that here. The church has its separate sphere. The state has its sphere, which is civil government, and the two should not interfere one with the other. But they didn't, it never even crossed their minds that meant that a person's faith didn't influence their view of politics or their political actions.
Wow.
That's an absurdity. A faith that does not inform your political views isn't a faith. It's just kind of a meaningless opinion that you have.
Wow. That is so profound. That is so profound. And I don't think that resonates at all with our leaders anyway, that would tell us you can go into your four walls, but don't bring that out into the street. And I don't think I've heard anyone articulate it in such a way that, you know, church versus government, not faith and government, because my faith goes with me, whether I'm in the building, driving my car, brushing my teeth, wherever I am, right? And it informs how I view the world.
Right.
Right.
And this really becomes an issue with the monotheistic religions, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, because other, you know, pantheistic religions, really, they can kind of exist in a conglomerative way along with a lot of other beliefs, and it doesn't really matter. But when you say there is one God and he created everything, that's an implication of personal responsibility to that creator, that, and it necessarily denies anyone else's claim to that throne, right?
Yes.
So Christianity, Judaism, Islam, they're historically and inevitably at odds for that reason.
I mean, I am loving this guy. Are you guys getting this? This is so profound, because I read a book not too long ago that's, and I cannot remember the name of it. I was actually thinking of it as I was driving in. But one of the quotes I remember this author saying is, have you ever wondered why you're not as holy as you want to be? He said, well, it's because you never really intended to be. You know, and that's the reason why you are not as holy or as righteous as you want to be, because you never really intended to be. And the things that you're talking about now, we talked about it on a previous program, of cognitive dissonance, of, you know, of who was at the center. Everything basically comes down to who is at the center of your universe. Are you the individual at the center of your universe, or is there someone greater than you? And if there's some, and whoever is at the center, you're going to go about trying to figure out how to please that person, how to surrender to that person and to the demands of that person. Mm-hmm. So if there is a God, then you're going to figure out, how do I surrender to that God? What does he want from me? And how can I align myself with that? But if I'm at the center, then it's okay, Kathy, well, what do you want? What would make you happy? What would make it easier, more comfortable for you? And then I'm going to create a worldview that aligns with that.
It's called humanism.
It's called humanism. Another term, materialistic. Or materialism. But it's very interesting, guys. I mean, just all of this, just this whole conversation. And I'm so excited to have had you on here. I would love to have you back so we can talk a little bit more. Thank you so much, Patrick, for being here. Guys, you've been listening to It's a New Day on 1180 WFYL. It's a New Day with your host, Kathy Barnett. And I just have Patrick Coker in here with me. Guys, you want to hear more from him? Give us a call, 610-539-TALK.
Life, confusion and disagreement will still remain. On the other hand, King Solomon, the wisest man, shared advice that, if heeded, would provide direction and certainty. It would change the world. Hello, I'm Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network. In Ecclesiastes chapter 12, Solomon said, "Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the entire duty of man. Because God will bring every action into divine review with every secret thing, and he will determine whether it was good or evil." That's right. Every deed, every action, and every thought, public or private, is being recorded by God Almighty, the great judge of all mankind. Everything, nothing hidden, nothing covered, nothing secret. How much do you fear God and keep his commands? I'm Sam Rohr of the American Pastors Network, asking you, whose advice are you heeding? Some human expert or God, who will judge even the experts?
Sign up as a partner at papastors.net.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gossett, one of the many voices of News Talk 1180 WFYL AM on your radio dial. Streaming worldwide online 24/7 at 1180WFYL.com. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a WFYL advertiser. We provide quality programming with local and national hosts, expert political commentators who cover a wide variety of topics about local and national issues of the day. If you'd like to attract more business, more clients, or more customers, try advertising with us. Write to us, info@1180WFYL.com, or call us at the station, 610-539-1783. That's 610-539-1783, or by email at info@1180WFYL.com. Find out more about us and listen online anytime at 1180WFYL.com. King of Prussia, Philadelphia. To protect freedom of speech, God bless America.
Hi, I'm Scott Newcomer with Christian Businessmen's Connection, CBMC. Are you a Christian businessman? Do you feel like an ambassador in your workplace? In 2 Corinthians 5:20, the Apostle Paul tells us that Christ followers are ambassadors for Christ. So do you feel like one? Do you know how to walk like one? If you'd like to learn more about how to be a marketplace user, walking daily in intimacy with God, how to be discipled or disciple others, how to share your faith simply in the marketplace, how to apply biblical principles to your life, and how to have a group of like-minded Christian businessmen around you to encourage you. Basically, to be the man God designed you to be, right where you work, right where God has you. Contact us at CBMC and get connected. Just go to cbmc.com or call me, Scott Newcomer, at 610-304-1493. That's 610-304-1493.
Hello and welcome back to It's a New Day with your host Kathy Barnett on 1180 WFYL. You can call in at 610-539-TALK, 610-539-TALK. And wrapping up the back half of our time together, we have on the line with us Susan and Al Locke and Kim. And where are you guys calling in from?
Hi, Kim, with a wonderful group of people. I hope we're not talking over each other, are we?
Well, I am hearing a little overlap. Is that Kim talking? Okay. Well, hello, Susan and Al. How are you guys?
We're fine.
Thank
you. Awesome. Kim, can you hear me?
I can.
Awesome. Now, Susan, what were you saying a few moments ago? Where are you guys located right now?
We're at the K&J Diner here on West Main Street in Main Street in West Norriton, and we're attending a meeting. Americans for Prosperity have a subgroup called Bridge to Wellbeing, which is an educational arm of their organization to help people in the community learn how to do basic things like budgeting, couponing, learning about their rights. It's educational, and so we have a wonderful group of people here learning about that. And
this is being hosted by American Prosperity, and the project is called what again? Bridge?
Bridge to Well-Being.
Bridge to Well-Being. Awesome. Right. So what are they doing to help people bridge their lives?
They're going into communities and getting people in the communities, in churches, in different organizations, involved in teaching people how to do couponing, how to budget, how to manage their money better, that sort of thing. Al and Kim, feel free to, we'll get them to share with you a little bit. But it's really very exciting. There have been many lives turned around and changed as they learn some of these basic skills that they may not have had an opportunity to learn about earlier, and it's an alternative to going on to government programs and becoming dependent upon the government, which is very exciting.
Oh, that is so exciting, right? When you can teach a person how to fish instead of giving them a fish.
Exactly. They have a wonderful video that shows some of the classes that they've, this is nationwide, the woman who's speaking here today is from Virginia, and showing some of the classes and the results of individuals and families there. It's really turned their lives around. It's very exciting. Very exciting.
Right. And okay, so now you said that this Bridge to Wellness, to Well-Being, is a national program?
Yes, it is.
She's actually right here now. This is Beth Ann Mumford. She's the Pennsylvania director for the whole state. And she's on the phone. I think she'll be able to explain it much better than we can. Here she is.
Yeah. Hello, Beth Ann. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it sounds like you guys are doing some really fantastic things in the communities.
Yeah, it's a really exciting program. And I just heard you ask if this was a national program. So this is a program developed by our educational foundation. And we're piloting it in a number of states across the country, Pennsylvania being one of them. And we're thrilled to have it here. We've been working mostly in the western part of the state with these bridge programs. We've done a number of sessions, whether it's couponing or, you know, dinner on a dime, helping people budget and, you know, buy good nutritional food for their family at a cost that fits the family budget. Those have been really, really successful. We are interested in finding communities in the southeastern part of Pennsylvania where these programs would be beneficial as well. So they're really educational. They're designed to, you know, come in and build a community of folks who are getting information that helps empower their own lives, whether it's financial planning or, you know, how to grow a garden or understanding your rights or couponing, you know, it's going to look different for different communities depending on what their needs are, but that's exciting because I think it gives us a great opportunity to bring some education empowerment to folks who maybe wouldn't otherwise seek it.
I love it, and I think Susan had mentioned earlier, it sounds like a way to, instead of having the government overreach into our day-to-day lives, actually people like yourself going into the community and teaching others.
Absolutely. I think that people feel empowered and they feel more excited about charting their own path to the American dream if they know that they have the tools within their own lives to really do it and to make different decisions and create the well-being that works best for them, right? The government tends to do a one-size-fits-all, but we all need very different things in our lives to build our lives the way that we want, to find our own happiness. So, you know, empowering people and giving them the tools to be able to implement in their own daily lives is really exciting because those tools are going to mean different things to different people depending on where they are.
You know, I mean, truly, it is so encouraging to hear you say the things that you're saying. And I'm assuming most of the communities that you're going into are socioeconomically depressed or challenged communities.
That has been our experience through this program. We've worked with a lot of churches. If you look at financial planning or budgeting or how to choose good nutritional food, you know, on a tight budget, all of those things are appealing to people who struggle every day to, you know, kind of make ends meet. And sometimes it's difficult to, you know, to know what you should be doing when you're in that kind of situation. So this really brings a lot of good information to folks so that they can chart their own path forward.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and one of the things I have come to learn over the years is that what I think is common is not always common. Like you would think some of the knowledge that you guys are providing is common for the typical individual, but it's not so common. And then you come in and then you begin to show people things that they probably never even thought about before.
Well, and I don't know if they mentioned this to you earlier, but we showed a video when we started, and there was a young lady in the video who had come to one of our early events in Virginia. And I like to tell her story now because she came to a couponing event and a financial planning event. Now she is a trainer of ours because once she started seeing that she had the ability to control her own finances and budgeting, she and her husband, you know, a year after starting to attend these events, bought a home. And
oh, wow.
She talks about how it had never occurred to her that she was the kind of person who could own a home.
Wow.
Like, it had not been part of her worldview.
And
so we were able... Yeah, so we had been able to give her, you know, some of the information empowerment that helped her see there is a path for me to do this and I control it.
Bravo. Bravo. Now, so what do you need from the community? Do you need volunteers? Do you need resources? Do you need buildings, contacts? What do you need?
Yeah, contacts mostly. I mean, if you know a community where you think a program like this would be beneficial, then let us know. So that's what we're looking for. You know, you guys who live here know the communities better than we do, and you know where the needs are.
And how can people get in touch with you?
Right. So my, you can contact me via email. It's bmumford, M-U-M-F-O-R-D, at afphq.org.
At AFP?
AFPHQ.org.
Awesome. .org. Okay, let me get that again. That's B Mumford, B M as in Mary, U M as in Mary, F as in Frank, Ford, B Mumford at AFPHQ.org. And people can go there. They can send you an email to get in touch with you to let you know about contacts or maybe they just want to volunteer with your organization.
If you have questions, if you're somebody with a unique area of expertise that you think would be really beneficial, let us know that too. We're always looking for trainers, you know, to go to help bring some of this information to folks.
Awesome. Bethan, thank you so much. Guys, this has been It's a New Day. God bless. See you soon.
YL homepage. Did you know you could stream us anytime, night or day, 24/7? At 1180WFYL.com. If you like what you hear on WFYL, please email us at info@1180wfyl.com to let us know.
Chances are there'll never be an emergency ever again. But just in case, let's talk about a plan.
Okay.
Who is going to grab the go bag?
What's a go bag?
It is a bag we do not have that is filled with things we really, really need in an emergency.
Guess we won't have to worry about it then.
Well, this is great. I am so glad that we don't have a plan.
I know.
Winging It is not an emergency plan. Make sure your kids know what to do during an emergency, who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.